Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin in a moment and look into the recent intelligence failures which had the US intelligence community and Israel's intelligence service telling President Obama that the risk of Mubarak being toppled was less than 20%. Robert Baer, a veteran CIA operations officer in the Middle East, joins us. Then we'll analyze the President and the Republicans' House's budget proposals with economist James Galbraith, the author of The Predator State. With no budget this year and no agreement likely on the 2012 budget, we'll look into the three big lies muddying the waters. One, that we should even be talking about cutting the deficit and not stimulating the economy. Two, that we are only arguing over 12% of the overall budget. And three, that revenues, which are the only way to redress the deficit, are not on the table. And then finally, we'll talk with Alternet's Adele Stan, who covered last week's CPAC conference and has an article at alternet.org, Right-Wing Disunity Clashes at This Year's Conservative Political Action Conference. She will describe some of the highlights, such as the merciless heckling of Donald Rumsfeld, who was presented with, I'm not kidding, the Defender of the Constitution Award by Dick Cheney. I'm speaking with Robert Baer, author of the New York Times bestseller Sleeping with the Devil, about the Saudi royal family and its relationship with the United States, and See No Evil, which recounts Baer's years as a top CIA Middle East operative. See No Evil was the basis of the acclaimed film Syriana, which earned George Clooney an Oscar for his portrayal of Mr. Baer. His most recent book is The Devil We Know, dealing with the new Iranian superpower. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Baer.
It's great to be here.
And in terms of the apparent intelligence failings, as I mentioned in the opening, my understanding is that both the U.S. intelligence community and Israel's intelligence service were telling President Obama on January the 25th that the risk of Mubarak being toppled was less than 20%. Is that your understanding?
It is. I think the CIA missed it. Mossad missed it. Everybody missed it. The State Department missed it. You know, people weren't paying attention to Egypt. That's just the truth.
And why is that? Because I take it that what they're paying attention to, what the CIA station in Egypt is paying attention to, is stuff, perhaps weapons being shipped through the canal, the Muslim Brotherhood. Is that what's happening, that they're being tasked to look for the bad guys and not look what is happening within the country itself?
Well, Ian, I think it's worse than that. I mean, two-thirds of CIA personnel right now are devoted to Afghanistan and Iraq, to two wars we probably don't need to be in. It's drained the place. If you have a station in Baghdad of 1,000 people and you have the same thing in Afghanistan spread across that country, you don't have anybody for Egypt. All those people that were supposed to go into Arabic language programs, become specialists, have all been drawn away. No one was looking at the street. And as small as it is in Cairo, what they're devoted to is dealing with the Egyptian government, or they're dealing with, bin Laden or something else. I mean, we have to look at it this way. The intelligence community is looking in the rearview mirror at 9/11, and that's all it's thinking about. So when the street explodes, they don't have a clue.
Well, apparently Stephanie O'Sullivan, who's the CIA Associate Deputy Director, when she was talking, recently appearing before the Intelligence Committee, chaired by Senate Intelligence Select Committee, chaired by Dianne Feinstein, Feinstein said that, I have doubts with whether the Intelligence Committee lived up to its obligations in this area, talking about Egypt. The CIA official Stephanie O'Sullivan said that some information was we'd warned of instability. Well, that sounds like vague sort of boilerplate stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah, this stuff happens all the time. You always, if you're an intelligence agency, take a look at instability, and they've actually got algorithms they can run through a country's economy and its politics and, demographics, and they come up with saying, hey, there's a 30% chance that this country could collapse in however many years. But it's like the Iranian nuclear program, where every 4 years, somebody either in Israel or the United States will predict that Iran's going to get a nuclear bomb. It's just the way these things work. But actually, explaining to the president that the Egyptians are hungry and and there's high, the unemployment is so high that it was coming to a point. No one predicted that. And you would think the Egypt, you know, the Israelis of all people would have, but they didn't either. I mean, they are so focused on the West Bank and Gaza that they missed Egypt.
So Robert Baer, again, former top CIA Middle East operative, is this tied in with an overall blindness to what our real strategic assets are? And we've always looked upon national security purely in military terms. And I don't think the United States appreciates its soft power. It doesn't appreciate the fact that in many ways the Cold War ended because of MTV and rock and roll, not because of nuclear missiles. And it seems that we've missed the big picture here again. This is about social networking. The secular, tech-savvy young Arab revolutionaries, not just operating in Egypt, by the way, but networking throughout the entire Middle East.
Well, you know, that's true, you know, for a certain level of society, but it's more basic than that. You have a country of 80 million. It's every 10 months, it's adding another million people. You've got Cairo that's adding 1,000 people a day. That's a lot of people for a city with no infrastructure. You've got no jobs for these people. And eventually, they're going to rise up in riots. They're just not going to care. I mean, it's that basic common sense. And, you know, and we're spending tens of billions of dollars in Afghanistan going after a threat that's probably no longer a threat. You know, we've completely missed the boat on this, I think, because if the Middle East does go up in flames, you have to look at Bahrain today and Tehran and Algeria, you know, you have something that could be akin to 1989, and we've just missed it.
Well, Yemen started over the weekend. So did Algeria. Morocco is also a possible domino that could fall to the democratic contagion. And Bahrain, as you mentioned today, and on Friday, of course, in Iran, they have the anniversary of Khomeini's takeover, and the regime is frantic in Iran, trying to stop the the Green Movement. At the same time, they spent the last few weeks trying to take credit for what's happening in Egypt, right?
Well, I find it quite amazing, because I'm an Arabist, and I had spent years and years predicting that the street would rise, the first Gulf War and so on. I was absolutely wrong, and all of a sudden, you know, this sort of vague prediction has turned out to be true. And I can't tell you, and I've spent, you know, my adult life in the Middle East, where it's going next, and that should scare a lot of people, because don't look at Egypt as being done. There was a military coup last Friday, and every time there's been a military coup in Egypt, and I'm talking about 1952, and when Sadat succeeded Nasser, and when Mubarak succeeded Sadat, there's always been a turn to the Muslim Brotherhood. There's always been a extreme nationalism in Egypt when it comes under threat. And we simply can't predict what they're going to do next. They may, I'm not saying they will, repudiate Camp David at some point if there's a popular elected parliament. It probably wouldn't be wise. But when you get the people out in the street, this is what happens.
Well, just to deal with the most recent book you wrote, Robert Baer, The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower, given there's a build-up now to the Friday celebrations, which the government's frantically trying to control, and they've arrested the two opposition leaders who are ayatollahs under house arrest. My understanding of what is going on in Egypt with the people behind this movement, not the Muslim Brotherhood who you just said might come back, my understanding was that they were somewhat marginalized by this revolution. It was precipitated by these tech-savvy young people, including this Google executive. And I understand they're networking across the states and across the Middle East, using the works, by the way, of an American, Gene Sharp, as their inspiration. He also was the inspiration for the Otpor uprising in Serbia and the various uprisings in the former Soviet states, Ukraine, Georgia, etc. So isn't there a fundamental difference between what these young, what the young Arab street feels, and this reactionary Islamo-fascist regime in that's holding onto power in Tehran?
Well, I think, you know, we have to look at, first of all, as Twitter is, I mean, how many Egyptians really have smartphones that are on their phones that are communicating like this? You know, there's probably about 70 million of them that aren't. And they haven't really, you know, weighed in on this revolution yet. What you find in Egypt is there's a whole big part of the population which falls back on conservative Islam, whether you call it the Muslim Brotherhood or one of the other 400 Islamic organizations there. You know, it's just impossible to predict. I mean, you'd be better off asking an Egyptian expert, but I don't. And it's the same way with Iran. It's a country that the young men and women could spark a revolt, but what's going to happen to the countryside? Who's going to follow? What's going to happen to the labor unions? What's going to happen to the military, and especially the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps? That could split up next week, for all we know. And this is what I'm talking about, though, is the blindness of Americans is we're so remote from this, you know, this ground up politics which seems to be taking over that I wouldn't dare predict what's going to happen.
Well, you've made the point, I think, which is well taken, Robert Baer, that all of our assets, our military and intelligence assets, are drawn to these two losing wars, Iraq, which we've effectively lost in Iran, won, and Afghanistan, that we're mired in, spending $100 to $150 billion a year on a country with a GDP of $15 billion. That one is going nowhere. So it seems to me, though, that the thing that I'm trying to pin down here, which I'm responding to what you just said, is that are we therefore being somewhat misled by the euphoria of this sort of young middle class revolt in Egypt, and to some extent the Green Movement in Iran, in as much as while they share our values and want our way of life, they may be able to spark a revolution, but not contain and control the aftermath of the revolution. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think we have to look at Egypt is it was a classical military coup against Mubarak. I mean, even Omar Suleiman, the man who took over, said it was a coup d'etat. And I think we have to look at it that now. The question is, what is the military going to do? Is it going to establish a democratic parliament, elections, a new constitution and the rest of it? Or is it going to repress Egyptians? And we're just going to have to wait to see on that, because I'm not even sure they know themselves right now. They prefer to kick this can down the road, and that's the same way it goes for Tehran. Will the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps come out in the street with armor and suppress another revolution there? That's to be seen.
Well, the point that you made earlier about Egypt essentially having, I believe the CIA did have reports on what's called the youth bulge, and that's a phenomenon throughout the entire Middle East, that it's largely demographically young and getting younger part of the world where these old autocrats, potentates, and dictators simply aren't meeting the needs and aspirations of millions and millions of young people coming up. But with a population of 85 million, I think you're also suggesting here that that country, which already has a natural resource problem, right? There's not enough water. It's got to be, did you say 1,000 people a day are added to the population of Cairo?
Of Cairo, yeah. And with no new infrastructure, basically.
Right. So there's
yeah.
That's a time bomb ticking.
And the other time bomb that's hard to factor in is, for instance, China's wheat crop, which is going to be more or less fail this year, whether it's down 20 or 30%, I don't know, as well as Australia's just drought in various parts of the world. And if commodity prices shoot up along with oil, you know, Brent is up to $104 or something like that today. If this all continues to go up, it's going to squeeze the average Egyptian. And they will be out in the street for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. So here we have a situation again. I'm speaking with Robert Baer, former top CIA Middle East operative, author of The Devil We Know, dealing with the new Iranian superpower. So we have our focus is on the two wars that we've spent an enormous amount of treasure on, and we've lost one, and we're in the process of losing another. Our military and intelligence assets are all being drained to service that kind of quagmire. Then you have these extraordinary demographic effects, and then you have the possibility of commodity prices running up and causing food riots, etc. And is anybody, do you think the president's being given the benefit of a kind of conversation like the one that we're having?
I think they deal one crisis at a time. I think that during this one, from the beginning of February, the president was demanding to know what's going through Mubarak's mind. What's he going to do? We saw us sending a special envoy to Cairo. We didn't really get an answer.
And then he completely embarrassed the president by going to Munich and saying that he thought Mubarak should stay.
Well, his law firm works for Mubarak. I mean, what was that? Was a little bit.
Yeah.
Well,
apparently there's a bit of a battle going on between Hillary and Gates and the old guard and the kind of young people on Obama's National Security Council, like Samantha Power, who are more into the 21st century.
There should be a battle, but let's give the president the benefit of the doubt. He inherited this system,
mm-hmm.
and it's broken, and Washington is broken. I mean, come on, what we should have on the ground in Cairo today is people that have spent 15 to 20 years there working in the Foreign Service or the CIA who have a fat Rolodex and a lot of sources to get ahead of this wave. And we don't have that because the Foreign Service has picked up this Harvard Business School of Management that you could move a manager from one job to another. So one day you're in Kabul, the next day you're in Caracas. It doesn't work. That's the problem of American society, not just the Foreign Service.
Well, apparently the lack of specialty is so pervasive that you can't even. You're better off reading the New York Times, but by the time you're reading the New York Times, it's too late, right?
It's over, and they suffer the same problems. They're moving correspondents from around the world to Cairo, and they have to catch up. I just talked to a guy who was over at my house that just came back from eastern Afghanistan, and he was appalled to find out that our troops still do not have translators from English into Pashto. They rely on Dari speakers.
Right.
So, we have no clue what's going on in Kandahar and places like that. We can't speak the language. We don't have translators. We are bogged down in a quagmire. And in the meantime, the old nation states of the Middle East are wobbly.
So, to return to the last book that you wrote, Robert Baer, The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower, do you think that you said you don't know what's going to happen next week? I was surprised. I spoke yesterday with Deborah Amos, who's NPR's Middle East correspondent. She's in Saudi Arabia. And I wasn't referring to your earlier book, The Devil We Know, but I was talking about whether or not the social networking and stuff is going on in Saudi Arabia, and I said, as much as we're afraid of the Muslim Brotherhood and perhaps overstated in Egypt, you can't understate the influence of the Mutawa king. And she said that it's really changing. That the current king has liberalized. That she walks around. She's walking around Saudi Arabia now without a veil, and kids are boys and girls or young people are actually together in public, and the religious police aren't stopping them. So are there things to be hopeful about? I don't think we can be hopeful about Iran, but in other parts of the Arab world?
Oh, I think it's hopeful. I mean, we should break down these systems in the Gulf. They haven't worked well. They fueled Islamic fundamentalism in Egypt, in Afghanistan. We're not served well by them. The misuse of their money, we are not served well by. And you know, these systems are built on lies. You saw the WikiLeaks came out, and it's a very good report if you read it. The Saudis have lied about their oil reserves, and they're 40% less than they say they are. That's a potential catastrophe. And we need to shine a little bit of light on these systems. And, you know, you just keep your fingers crossed on Egypt and Saudi Arabia. Let the Al Saud fall. They're not our friends.
Well, given what they've done to how much they've radicalized Pakistan and Afghanistan, I couldn't help agreeing with you. Many people have described them as the Taliban with oil. I think it's a fair description.
They started the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. They, you know, with Zia-ul Haq, they started in Pakistan, the fundamentalism, as well as Afghanistan, simply because they wanted to defend their system, their ownership of Saudi Arabia, and fight communism and Nasserism. And this is what we're getting is blowback. Now, if we could turn a secular elite that could spark a revolution like they did in France in 1789, hey, we got something going.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us today, Robert Baer.
Thank you.
Good to talk to you again. Again, I was speaking then with Robert Baer, who is the author of the New York Times bestseller Sleeping with the Devil, about the Saudi royal family and its relationship with the United States, and See No Evil, which recounts Baer's years as a top CIA Middle East operative. See No Evil was the basis of the acclaimed film Syriana, which earned George Clooney an Oscar for his portrayal of Mr. Baer. His most recent book is The Devil We Know, dealing with the new Iranian superpower. Let's take a brief station break, and we'll return in a moment and talk with economist James Galbraith about Obama's new budget proposal.